Chapter 10. Stolas. Stolas walked up to the front of the IMP's office, taking a deep breath, mentally preparing himself for the trip ahead. He was to meet with this Zestial fellow this evening, at a secret meeting place in Pentagram City. Apparently, after the Elder Overlord had fought his way through the chaos of the Great Purge, as the masses were beginning to call it, he and some like-minded associates had made an establishment located somewhere in the northern part of the Pentagram. Stolas was to meet him, and several other individuals whom shared his father's interests, or could at least be paid to pretend as such. Paimon had called it the Traditionalist Council. What they would do when they were all collected together, he didn't know yet. All Stolas knew was that the overall goal was to help maintain the underworld's stability, and prevent further unrest, halting rash actions and preventing total anarchy to reign, or worse, for one of the six other surviving princes to take control of Pride in this hour of uncertainty. They would need to move quickly. The ones closest to Lucifer, namely Mammon and Satan, would probably already be hearing of the news of their brother fallen angel's death. What actions they would take, not to mention Beelzebub, Asmodeus, Leviathan, and Belphegor, only time would tell. But ultimately, it would be best for them to ensure that things remained roughly as they had been. Demonic politics was already divisive and cutthroat enough, without a struggle for the throne to inflame everyone's worst impulses. Better to secure the Morningstar girl's position and keep things as they were than to toss the entire realm into chaos. Stolas knew that, logically, his father's reasoning was sound. But still, he would have preferred to stay at home, to stay safe, and try to mend the rift that the years of dysfunction and divorce had forced between him and his daughter. It was only now, at the last, that he realized how much he'd neglected his relationship with Octavia in recent years. As he raised his talon hand and knocked on the door to the assassin's office, Stolas mastered his wandering thoughts and focused, pushing his worries about his little owlet to the back of his mind. It was time to get to work. The sooner everything was set right, the sooner he could go home. The door swung open after only a few seconds, and Blitzo greeted him with open arms and a big grin. The imp's fierce, confident red-yellow eyes took in the Goetian prince and set his heart beating a bit faster as he pulled Stolas inside. He was dressed handsomely in all black with a trim of red, the color combo going well with his red and white spotted skin and those long, handsome, swept-back horns. "So, Stolas, my good fuck buddy. What's all this about business in Pentagram City? Are we killing someone there, guarding you, killing someone while guarding you? What's up?" Before Stolas could decide where to begin, one of Blitzo's employees responded,
"It probably has something to do with the fact that Lucifer is dead, sir,"
the one named Moxie said, before Stolas could answer the question. Moxie was a smaller imp, freckle-faced and perpetually anxious, with a boyish, pinched expression, wide eyes the color of egg yolk, and shaggy white hair with black angled horns. He wore a black and white trimmed tailcoat with red buttons and a little red bow tie and tight black pants. He was looking at Blitzo with mild concern, who stared back at him blankly. Finally, Blitzo burst into laughter, rolling his eyes as Stolas stood, awkwardly watching the exchange.
"Moxie, that's fucking hilarious, but..."
"No, sir, I'm serious. He's really dead," Moxie cut in. "Look!"
He showed his boss the video that Octavia had shown Stolas the other day, the part where the Sinner Woman holding the camera had zoomed in on Lucifer's severed head, and the Goetian winced as Blitzo's jaw dropped.
"Holy fucking shit,"
Blitzo said as Moxie put the phone away.
"Yes, well..."
Stolas finally broke his silence and took in a deep breath.
"Your employee is correct in his assumption. Due to the death of the Morning Star, there is a power vacuum in the Circle of Pride. In all of hell, really,"
Stolas explained patiently.
"We have little time to act and much to do, but it's important that I and a few other traditionally minded individuals ensure the stability of the underworld at this tumultuous time. I don't know exactly how much must be done yet. We're going to a meeting my father has arranged, and we'll get more information from there."
"Well, now, that sounds pretty neat. I ain't never been to the big center city before.
Moxie's wife, the imp they called Millie, chimed in. She wore an odd black top that looked kind of like overalls, if overalls were just a shirt, and ripped black leggings. Her messy black hair and straight horns framed a buck-toothed, yet girlishly pretty face. The hellhound, Luna, grimaced as she looked into her phone, finger-swiping. She was dressed as Stolas usually saw her, with a black crop top and shorts to contrast her white and gray fur. The prince had always thought that Blitzo really ought to have his daughter cover up more, but now wasn't the time for that conversation.
"I wouldn't get your hopes up, Millie," she said. "There's not much left of the place."
"What you mean?"
"Ahem. We can discuss this on the way, but for now I really insist that we must be going. The meeting is tonight, and I don't want to be late. We'll be taking your car as we discussed, right, Blitzy?"
Stolas stated, trying his best to change the subject.
"Yeah, sure. Hope you don't mind a bit of a squeeze," he said, grabbing the keys out of a drawer in the front desk,
as Moxie loaded guns from a safe against the far wall into a duffel bag, and Millie grabbed an oversized, double-headed axe off a display on the wall. After going downstairs with a troop of pint-sized hitmen and finding their van in the parking lot, Stolas cringed. He probably wouldn't fit in the front, so he'd most likely share the back with the Hellhound girl. It was a long drive to Pentagram City.
"Hey, Stolas, far be it from me to tell you how to do your whooshy-swooshy council stuff,"
Blitzo said as he pressed his key fob, and the car chirped as it unlocked.
"But wouldn't it be a lot easier just to teleport to the city with the book? In fact, hold on, let me see if I can..."
Blitzo grabbed the book off the straps that held it to his back and got as far as opening it when the demon prince grabbed up the tome and shoved it into his robes.
"Hey!"
Blitzo started angrily, seemingly forgetting that the book was, in fact, Stolas' property.
"I'm sorry, Blitzy, but we can't go teleporting anywhere into the city right now. I don't know exactly where the meeting point is. We just have to meet someone around the north side of the pentagram."
"Well, why can't we just teleport somewhere in that general area, then?"
Blitzo argued.
"Because," the Goetian began patiently, "the entire city is a war zone right now. All public transportation has been cut off. Driving is the only sure way to get there, Blitzy. For all we know, we could teleport directly into a firefight, or right under a collapsing building, directly into open flames. It's just not safe."
Blitzo blinked a few times and shrugged.
"I guess when you put it like that, a little road trip doesn't sound so bad,"
the long-horned imp said with a shrug of his shoulders.
"Well, hop in, babe, and we'll be off."
Stolas blushed and waved a foppish limp wrist in Blitzo's general direction playfully.
"Oh, Blitz, come now, no pet names, not in front of your employees,"
he scolded, in a tone that very blatantly advertised how much he enjoyed the attention. Luna suppressed a gag. Moxie rolled his eyes, and Millie only smiled. She was always in a bright mood, it seemed, and Stolas appreciated that. He wished that Octavia could learn to stop feeling so sad every now and then. Maybe he should have taken her after all, he considered idly. He took his place in the back of the van and sighed, sitting down next to Luna and crossing his arms. After a few moments, the car started up, and they were off, the low rumble of the poorly muffled engine being an omnipresent soundtrack as the buildings of Imp City began to pass them by. The skyscrapers and apartment buildings seemed to look down on them, watching through hundreds of shining, flat-paned eyes as they went down the city roads. It was notably quiet on the streets, which was something Stolas hadn't really noticed until now. What few people were around looked nervous, uneasy, and couldn't help but glance up at a red yet empty sky. Though the extermination was over and done, and though Hellborn usually were exempt, it seemed the brazen breaking of all previous restrictions on the extermination, along with Lucifer's demise, had shaken the confidence every Hellborn denizen once had in their own safety and security from falling victim to angelic wrath. They passed the time with general small talk as they took a route out of the city, driving towards the long stretches of road between the population centers of Hell. There was a large gap of undeveloped Tartaran land between the two population centers, and so as the time passed, the buildings began to become less and less frequent, the population more rich as they left the inner city behind. After a short drive through the Goetian Quarter, they finally got onto the undeveloped roads, and slowly, but surely, left the lights and bustle of damned civilization behind for the dark, sandy, sulfurous wasteland that lay without. The road was pockmarked with potholes and occasional obstacles that Blitzo would have to drive around, but it was easy enough to navigate for one car on a straight road with a pretty clear line of sight, especially with no other traffic anywhere to be seen. It had been this way for quite some time, of course. These roads had been paved many thousands of years past, before Lucifer's time, and though they were very much showing their age, it seemed that using them wasn't yet impossible, merely inconvenient.
"Dad, can you fucking drive the car straight?"
Luna snapped, as a particularly sharp turn around a fallen boulder in the road caused her to lose her grip on her phone, which tumbled from her grasp, forcing the young hellhound woman to grope around the floor for it.
"Sorry, sweetie!"
he yelled over his shoulder as they began to drive straight again.
"It's not entirely his fault, my dear,"
Stolas said to her apologetically, taking the moment to break the awkward silence that had existed between him and Luna until now.
"These roads haven't been maintained since but a few years after the fall of Lucifer."
Luna looked at him with a raised eyebrow.
"What do you mean, fall?"
she asked, genuinely looking lost. Stola stared at her for a moment, incredulous. How could one not know their histories at her age? Sinners, he could understand. They came here from Earth and already had a lifetime of mortal history to think on. But how could a Hellborn live their whole life and never wonder?
"You don't know how he fell?"
he asked.
"I was never big into history, dude,"
Luna said, glancing at her phone. Stola sighed and turned on Blitzo with an accusing tone.
"Blitzy, how could you neglect your daughter's learning to such a degree? I taught my Via her histories when she was just a little owlette. It's important."
"Babe, I don't know what to tell you. I was raised in a circus. I barely know more than she does,"
he said with an easy shrug, apathetic to the Goetian's mild outrage. Stolas gaped at him in the rearview mirror, astonished. He knew Blitzo was lower classed, but he'd never even met any Hellborn who didn't know the basics of Hell's history. Then again, he didn't really know any imps besides Blitzo. It made him sad to think that so many of the lower classes remained so ignorant.
"I know my history,"
Moxie said proudly, and Millie grinned, putting an arm around his shoulder.
"Uh-huh. You're the smartest guy I know, sweetie."
There was a pregnant pause, until Blitzo sighed.
"Do you want to tell us, Stolas?"
he asked sarcastically, knowing the answer. The demon prince blushed and lowered his head.
"Yes,"
he said. Blitzo rolled his eyes.
"All right, you big nerd, go ahead. It's not like we've got much else to do."
Luna groaned and Stolas grinned, excited. Part of the Goetian knew that the imp was only humoring him, but it was still a kind gesture.
"All right, I guess I'll start at the beginning,"
Stolas said, clearing his throat and remembering back to the books he'd read as a boy.
"Long ago, many thousands of years in the past, Hell was a new realm in creation. The circles were all populated by the Hellborn, and there were no sinners, nor were there princes. Hell was ruled by the Goetians, and populated by hellhounds, dealmakers, imps, succubi, incubi, and all the other hellborn demons,"
he recited from memory.
"It was like this for some time before the fall. The exact number of years is lost to history. During this time, many hundreds of Goetian noble houses laid claim to every square mile of every realm, with small fiefdoms, fighting over petty territory, each with their own motivations and ambitions. After several generations, a few patriarchs began to rise above the rest, like the House of Baal, the House of Bileth, and the house of my father, Paimon."
He winced as Moxie turned and gaped at him in shock.
Your dad is the pieman?
Moxie's bright yellow eyes were wide as saucers, and Stolas smiled nervously, feeling vaguely embarrassed. People always did this when he mentioned his father.
What's the big deal? Big, tall, raven-looking dude with a crown on his head. He looks like any other stuffed shirt blue blood I've ever seen,
Blitzo remarked.
Blitzy, if you'd be so kind as to listen, I'm getting to why it's a big deal. May I continue, please?
The demon prince asked.
Sorry, Stolas,
Blitzo said with a sigh of mild irritation.
Now, where was I? Yes.
The nobleman snapped his fingers and continued.
So, Baal, Bileth, and Paimon were the mightiest of the Goetian nobles at the time, and after many years of rivalry, they were at something of a stalemate. It's not clear how long the stalemate would have persisted, and now we'll never truly know, because one day the sky split asunder, the ground shook, and in the glow of a golden light, the likes of which hell had never seen, the angels fell.
Stolas's voice became almost quiet then, eyes staring ahead as he pictured the spectacle of ages past in his vast mind's eye.
Lucifer was cast out of heaven for crimes against Creator and creation. Bruised and broken, he and his followers fell to the grounds of pride, their impact leaving a crater where, one day, Pentagram City would stand.
Stolas paused to take a breath and collect his thoughts, and this time, no one interrupted. In fact, Luna actually seemed to be listening, with mild interest. The only sound was the low rumble of the van's engine, and the background thrum of wheels on poorly maintained pavement. The Goetian cleared his throat and continued.
Now, at first, no one knew what to make of the outsiders. They were unlike anything ever seen in hell before. They were strong, ambitious, and after having been humbled by their peers as they had been, the angels were angry. It wasn't long before Lucifer and his fallen angels began to take out their aggressions on the Hellborn, who were unlucky enough to catch the Morning Star's eye. One noble house of Goetians fell, then two, then three, five, 10, 20, and so it went, until the other noble houses began to realize that if they didn't do something soon, he would conquer the entire Circle of Pride and then move on to the next one. The longer they let him fight them piecemeal, the stronger Lucifer grew. The Goetians knew that their lower caste subjects would all be taken from them and put into servitude under the fallen angels, and their era of supremacy would end, and probably their lives as well, if they didn't act soon. After some discussion between houses, the petty nobles had to each begrudgingly accept the fact that they couldn't face the wayward children of divinity on their own. Working together, the greatest of them combined their influences across the circles, and so the greatest of the great, House Baal, House Bileth, and House Paimon, came together as the first nobles of the Hellborn to lead the native population of Hell against its invaders.
As Stolas took a moment to collect his thoughts, he noted that they were hanging on his every word. Millie and Moxie were listening intently. Blitzo, still driving, had gone completely quiet, and even Luna had set down her phone to listen to the demonic nobleman tell his tale, ears perked up with interest.
The Morning Star's host faltered when facing this force. The fallen were comparatively few in number, but far stronger. However, with enough effort, they could be brought down. It took a heavy toll in Hellborn lives to kill one, but the Goetians noted that, while an angel's skin could not be pierced by any blade forged of man or demon, they were still injured by hellfire, and by bludgeon, and if one had the talent, by magic. First, Moloch was slain, then Dagon fell, then Ornias, Ephippus, and suddenly, the angels were at a stalemate. It seemed as though Lucifer could even be overcome, eventually. The Hellborn could multiply quickly, and the angels were few in number. It truly looked as though, eventually, hell would be hell once again.
Stolas paused, sighing, as he reached the part of the story that always made him a little sad.
There was to be a decisive battle. By the banks of the Lake of Fire, Divining the position of the angelic host with astralomancy, the three high nobles and their legions warped in front of several areas at once, surrounding the angels. A flying detachment of incubi and succubi circled their host on standby, denying them even their powers of flight to escape the attack. The Goetian's host combined numbered approximately 1.5 million soldiers, around 1,000 of whom were members of high-ranking Goetian noble families and their personal retinues who had also come to the field to command their respective legions. The angels were only 40,000, and Lucifer was among them. The day seemed to be theirs. If they could kill or capture the Morning Star, the war would be over. But alas, the noble Hellborn did not know how deeply they were to be betrayed. Moxie cringed knowingly. Luna, despite herself, was taking some interest.
"What the fuck do you mean, betrayed?" she asked.
"Well," Stolas answered softly. He closed his eyes, imagining the scene of all those scores of Hellborn crashing against the angels on the shores of the Flaming Lake. The clatter of battle, the way the ground must have shook, how thick the blood must have flowed across the ground. How much more glorious and terrible would it have been to behold it in person? The angels made a hasty defense, but they were boxed in and helpless. They fought valiantly, but the weight of the numbers was against them, and the Hellborn were determined. As they clashed for the fate of Hell, the force of the opposition's attack began to overwhelm the fallen, and angels began to die. It looked as though victory was at hand, until, without warning, their left flank turned and attacked their allies in the center. Dozens of commanding Goetia were killed with knives to the back as the battle line collapsed. In the confusion and dismay, my father slew his two fellow high nobles, catching them and the rest of the army completely off guard.
"Why would your pa do that?" Millie said, a note of sadness in her southern drawl.
Stolas smiled sadly.
In the night before the trap was sprung, Paimon had gone to Lucifer under a banner of peace and told him all that was planned. After that, he and the Morning Star treated in secret. Paimon wanted more power, and he saw Lucifer as the key to acquiring it. The leader of the Fallen needed help in the moment, and saw Paimon for the incredibly powerful and useful ally he would be. They were evidently fast friends. My father spoke at length with the leader of the Fallen Angels, and by the time that the first light of dawn was at hand, Paimon left the Angel and returned to his army. His game was set. All that was left to play was his hand. At the height of the battle, when the officers were intent on their victory, he gave the signal to his troops to turn on their fellows. In one fell swoop, he had killed almost all opposition to his own power and turned the tide of battle entirely in favor of the angels. He then helped Lucifer to mop up what resistance remained of the other realms and take total control of all seven circles. When finally they had gained their victory, the Goetians whom had survived swore loyalty to my father, who was named Client King of the Hellborn, a position he holds to this day. There was a long pause as everyone waited to see if he was done. When it was evident that Stolas had indeed concluded the tale, Luna huffed. "Your dad sounds like an asshole,"
she said, looking back into her phone. Stolas set his beaked face in a scowl and sighed, crossing his arms.
"You have no idea."
The rest of the ride went mostly in silence, the time of travel ticking by, the sound of the road's steady, low rumble against the tires of the van only briefly being interrupted by a soft word between Moxie and Millie, or Luna asking Blitzo when they would get there. Seldomly, there would even be a soft whoosh as they drove past another car fleeing the pentagram to try their luck elsewhere. Stolas sighed and stared out the window, letting his mind drift as the first shadows of the skyscrapers in Pentagram City became visible on the horizon. As the van rolled off the highway and into the city proper, a few sounds made themselves distinct, echoing off through the half-ruined metropolis. There was the occasional crackle of a low, guttering fire,
The sound of gunshots bouncing around so much it was impossible to tell where any were coming from. The occasional scream or roar of pain or fear or rage as someone was killed or wounded for scraps. Blitzo turned the vehicle around a corner, and Stolas noted a dealmaker standing by the crosswalk, holding a pistol openly in one hand, his grip loose and casual. He was wearing a gray suit and fedora, holding a little piece of paper with Stolas' sigil crudely drawn on it. He pointed down the street to his left as the car rolled past him.
"There,"
the Goetian said, pointing at the shark demon excitedly.
"All right, that's a bit fucking cliche, but I guess we're being all whooshy sneaky secret,"
Blitzo remarked, following the direction. They turned a few more times, taking instructions from another couple dealmakers who were evidently waiting for them. The scenery changed from a standard metropolis to a more classic architecture, typical of North American humans in the early 20th century. As they left the last of the skyscrapers behind and went deeper into this more suburban part of the city, Moxie read out a sign planted in a grass island between the two roads. It alone remained pristine, artfully carved and painted, looking completely out of place amongst the smashed houses and burnt, blood-stained parkway.
"Welcome to Cannibal Town?"
the small imp said, raising a concerned eyebrow as his wife stared wide-eyed out the window at all the carnage. The streets were very, very bloodied here. Bodies everywhere, which had already begun to rot. Stolas noted that all the dead were cannibals. You could pick them out easily with their wide, razor-toothed maws and large black eyes. The amount of these specific demons that lay dead here was staggering. However, he saw a handful of living ones who seemed to be trying their best to stay out of sight, but for every cannibal still breathing, there were at least 20 whom were not. He'd seen a fair few bodies on their way into the city, but there were piles of corpses here, and the whole place smelled of rotting meat. Why had the angels apparently killed so many of these demons in particular? Usually, they just killed whatever they saw and left it at that. Targeting a specific group was unheard of. Until now. These questions went unanswered for now because, as they were about to pass a rundown building with boarded-up windows and a sign that read, "Rosie's Emporium" on its roof, the door of the seemingly condemned establishment flew open, and a black-furred, rather short, multi-limbed sinner stepped out, waving them over. Blitzo rolled the window down.
"Hey, short stuff, are you with the, what was it called again, Stolas?"
"The Traditionalist Council?"
he said quietly.
"The Traditionalist Council, that's you, right?"
"That depends,"
the sinner responded, crossing one pair of hands and using the others to point a gun at Blitzo and jab a finger at their vehicle simultaneously.
"You got that fucking bird brain guy we supposed to be meeting with in that van, imp? 'Cause if he ain't here..."
I'm here,
Stolas shouted, leaning into the front seats from the back and waving nervously, moving to stop the gunfight before it started. Blitzo seethed as the vaguely insect-shaped demon lowered his gun. By the look of resentment that the sinner gave the Goetian prince, Stolas guessed that the man had really secretly been hoping for a fight. He had that look of barely caged aggression about him, the expression of one who liked to get what he wanted with violence and intimidation.
"Have your little lackeys park that fucking shitty around back and come inside, Your Highness. We've been waiting for ya,"
he instructed, a not insignificant amount of condescension bleeding into his tone as he spoke Stolas' title. Blitzo did just that, muttering curses about that smart-mouth fucking twink, and other such obscenities. The van stopped, and the imps, hellhound, and hellborn prince filed out and moved to the little building.
"Ugh, it fucking reeks out here,"
Luna remarked, covering her nose with a paw and grimacing at the smell of bodies and blood. Everyone muttered agreements as they left the van, and Stolas took a deep breath through a handkerchief to spare himself the smell, trying to focus on the bright side. It would be nice to see that Zestiel fellow again and catch up. Not to mention, he'd have Blitzo with him the whole time, so he wouldn't be too lonely. It could certainly be worse, all things considered.
"Why did the angels even do this?"
Moxie asked aloud. seemingly to no one in particular.
It was something to do with the princess and a project of hers. It infuriated Adam and the exorcist to such a degree he felt the need to make a point, I suppose.
Stolas said with a grimace. The sinner who had directed them to park was waiting at the door. He was wearing a trench coat and trilby, one set of hands in his pockets, the other folded across his chest. It seemed his sinner form gave him two sets of arms. He had to look up at the much taller demon, but even though the Goetian stood a head and a half above the sinner, the fuzzy, multi-limbed man showed no signs of feeling intimidated. He looked up and down, sizing up the demonic noble as if he were evaluating his worth, and was not entirely satisfied with what he saw. With a dismissive shrug, he held out a hand to Stolas.
"Name's Arachnus. Good to meet ya," he said, in a tone that suggested he found it anything but good to meet the owl-faced prince.
"Oh, my name is Stolas, and it's nice to meet you."
Stolas shook the offered hand and made to reply, but Arachnus cut him off.
Yeah, I know who you are. Your old man hired me. You know, we weren't expecting you to have brought, guests.
Oh, no, these aren't my guests. These are my bodyguards," the prince explained, gesturing to the imps.
Blitzo was still mad about being held at gunpoint, greeting Arachnus with a sneer.
"I'd say it's nice to meet you, but it's rarely ever nice to meet one of humanity's little failures. You've seen one loser, you've seen them all,"
Blitzo said dismissively.
"Anyway, the name is Blitz, and
I barely care to learn about this feathered fop's name. I ain't wasting the time to learn all of yours, capiche?"
he stated, motioning to the whole of IMPS, before turning around and opening the door.
"Follow me."
They did as they were told, but when the imps moved to follow Stolas into the building, Arachnus held up a hand.
"This meeting is private. You can leave your little guards outside, but they ain't going in with us."
Stolas winced and turned to Blitzo.
"I'm sorry, Blitzy. I'll be right back. Just stay out here for me, okay?"
the Goetian said, smiling apologetically as the imp crossed his arms and looked away.
"Yeah, I know," Blitzo replied icily. "Lower classes like us don't get to rub elbows with elite society. I'm used to it."
"It's not like that. It's just that my father has..."
"Hey!"
Arachnus snapped, motioning towards the open door.
"Let's go! Everyone's waiting on ya!"
We'll talk later, Blitz,"
Stolas said. He wanted to give him a kiss on the cheek, or a hug, to take the sting out of the exclusion, but he knew now wasn't the time, and so he mumbled an apology and closed the door, feeling like a jerk. Blitzo always assumed the worst in him, and it was frustrating, to say the least. Stolas always tried to be nice. He always tried to give his little imp lover a shoulder to cry on and a supportive word whenever he needed it. But he never opened up. The imp actually seemed to resent his kindness and affection. But why? He acted like just because Stolas was demonic nobility and Blitzo was a lowborn peasant, that meant that they couldn't love each other. But that was crazy. He loved Blitzo, and sometimes he could tell that part of Blitzo loved him back. So what was he doing wrong? Before he made himself sad, Stolas reminded himself that they certainly would be spending a lot of time together for the next few weeks. Maybe he could make a breakthrough with his prickly little imp, and finally make him see that Stolas' feelings were real and true. He could at least try. As he walked through the small, quiet building, following the spider center quietly, the Goetian took in his surroundings. The building they were in just looked like a closed-up restaurant. The lights were off, and they could see by the dim rays from Hell's sun coming through the gaps in the wood boards that covered the windows. There were cannibal dishes advertised on the walls on signs, along with tables and chairs positioned all around the room, but no people. The spidery sinner led them behind the cashier's counter and into the back where a small kitchen area was kept. It was clean and well put together, with many large, sharp-looking knives on racks and a shelf of spices and seasonings. To the back of the kitchen sat a freezer that Stolas really would prefer not to see the inside of, considering the fact that they were in Cannibal Town. Luckily, Arachnus didn't lead him towards the freezer. Instead, he approached a knife block on the counter, rubbing his chin in thought.
"Which one was it?"
the spider mumbled. After a brief pause, he reached out and grabbed the handle second from the right and pulled. It came out an inch, and then caught, and somewhere something made a soft click sound as an unseen mechanism in the walls activated. There was the low sound of something heavy sliding across the flat surface, and slowly, methodically, the seasoning shelf slid sideways, revealing a stairwell lit from above with hanging lighting fixtures. A secret basement? The Goetian raised an eyebrow. He knew they were trying to stay safe during a tumultuous time, but this seemed rather excessive.
"Are you sure all this secrecy is necessary?"
Stolas asked.
"It's not like anyone is looking for us."
Arachnus groaned in irritation and turned to the prince.
"This entire fucking city is a madhouse of carnage and chaos. We had to fight just to clear the road for you to get here. Never hurts to be careful. Now, if you're done being a wise guy..."
He pointed to the stairs.
"After you."
Stolas gave a short nod, and they walked down into the basement. There was the sound of soft, older music playing on a record player and the sweet scent of cigar smoke, which lent a soft haziness to the air. Stolas reached the bottom of the stairs and found the room to be small and spare. The walls were decorated with pleasant paintings of flowers and portraits of people who bore a striking resemblance to the cannibals they'd seen coming in, only the people depicted here were alive, with those same wide mouths, black eyes, and sharp teeth. Apart from that, there was a small bar where a large, squat dealmaker demon stood as bartender, eyeing the newcomer with a bored expression. The centerpiece of the room, however, was a fine-looking, vintage mahogany table. There were vines and roses carved into the legs, and the surface was painted to show a beautiful dark red rose on top, thorns and leaves and petals done in such detail that it almost looked photorealistic. Seated at the table were three individuals, who became four when Arachnus took his place. One was a cannibal woman, tall with grayish skin and pitch-black eyes. She wore a dark red dress trimmed with black lace and a wide-rimmed sun hat decorated in gray feathers. Her face would have been rather pretty in an old-fashioned sort of way, if it weren't for a fresh, painful-looking stitch on her cheek and a haunted, shell-shocked look to her eyes. Despite that, Stolas found her manner was oddly welcoming as she gave him a polite smile and dainty little wave. Near where she was seated, he noted Zestiel, hands clasped on the table, nodding in greeting to the demon prince. His four bright green eyes and thin, lipless mouth making it hard to tell if his smile was genuine or not. He was in his normal attire, a long black cloak and wide-brimmed black hat decorated with a green and brown feather. As he moved to sip a dark liquor from a small crystal cup placed on the table in front of him, the bright yellow-green trim on the inside of the coat was briefly visible. He nodded politely towards Stolas, tipping his hat.
"Stolas, how wonderful it is to see you again. Thine presence has been anticipated for some time. Please take thy seat."
Doing as he was asked, the Goetian seated himself next to the third and final member of the council, and he was surprised to notice that it was an imp. He had dark, almost purplish-red skin, and was clad in a pinstripe, navy-blue suit with black pinstripe slacks. A black fedora sat between his horns, which angled sharply back over his head in a way that seemed oddly familiar, but Stolas couldn't quite place it.
"Now that we're all here for our first meeting, I think we ought to introduce ourselves. What do you say, boys?"
the gray-skinned woman asked. Nobody objected, and so, after a brief pause, Zestiel began.
"Very well. I am Zestiel, eldest overlord, former member of the Overlord Council. Alas, I am also one of the last of the Overlord Council. However, mine reputation in this city is respected, perhaps even more so, now that mine associates are almost all deceased,"
Zestiel stated, before turning and looking expectantly at Arachnus. Arachnus sighed irritably and turned to Stolas.
Like I told you at the door, name's Arachnus. I'm a gun for hire, but I've also been in the underground of this shithole for a long time.
He pulled out a pack of cigarettes and lit one before continuing.
I know these streets like the back of my hands. Mr. Pyman thought it might be useful to have someone familiar with every inch of this shithole on the payroll. So, here I am.
The imp took a final drag on his cigar, before ashing it into the tray in front of him, wordlessly sliding it across the table to the spider center, and cleared his throat.
I'm Crimson. I lead a gang out of Imp City normally, but your daddy wanted some thugs for this job, just in case you needed to make some noise, you dig? I'm just here to make sure none of the other amateurs around here threaten whatever it is you blue-blood fucks are doing.
He said, matter-of-factly. Stolas recognized him after hearing his voice. This was the same gang leader who held Asmodeus's boyfriend hostage just a few months ago. He wanted to scold the little demon for such uncouth behavior, but considering the company they shared just now, and how he'd already kept everything waiting long enough, the prince decided against bringing it up. He'd definitely have to have a talk with his father, though. Would it have killed him to at least tell Stolas who his associates would be ahead of time?
You can call me Rosie, dear.
The dark-eyed, perpetually smiling lady said to him, turning the good, non-stitched side of her face to him as she spoke.
I'm familiar with Little Miss Morningstar. We worked together recently trying to...
She trailed off and looked almost like she was about to cry, before taking a deep breath and pressing on.
We tried to defend the hotel together, me and her and my people. It didn't go all that peachy, but you probably guessed that. Anyway, I think Charlie would still trust me if I go back to her, and from what your big shot daddy told me, he needs someone who the girl trusts.
Ah, well, it's nice to meet all of you, and nice to see you again, Zestiel. As you probably already know, I am Stolas, Demon Prince and son of the Hellborn King Pyman. It is my understanding that we are here to help guide the new queen towards a more traditional rule. She has some radical ideas and some silly flights of fancy, which she must learn to put aside for the good of all.
Zestiel nodded.
Agreed. I do not like the idea of the girl's foolish ideas of morality being pushed on us all.
Rosie sighed.
Charlie just ain't honest with herself about what we are down here. I'm afraid she has an idealized view of what hell could be. Working together is all well and good, but the way Al used to talk about her, I'm afraid it won't stop there. We gotta make sure that she understands that hell is hell. Things were good under Lucifer. I think we all agree they should stay that way.
So, how are we gonna make her see that?
Arachnus asked after a long drag off his smoke.
Any of you guys got a plan or something?
Stolas began to nod. He could work with this.
As a matter of fact, I do, Stolas said.
Thou art highest-ranking member of this council, Stolas,
Zestiel replied amiably.
Speak thy mind.
Well, there are many unknowns at this time, so I propose we spend these crucial initial days seeing where Pentagram City stands as of right now. Crimson, see if you can gauge roughly how many sinners in Hellborn are left after the Purge. Find out what power structures remain and see what opposition we face, if any.
I can do that,
he replied with a shrug.
Give me a few days, week at the most. My boys will know what's what in this town.
I'll help. I can show you where to start and what to keep an eye out for,
Arachnus stated. Crimson looked ready to argue against needing anyone's help, but he seemed to think better of it, only grimacing slightly in irritation. If Arachnus noticed the gangster's ire, he gave no sign.
Now, since Rosie has somewhat of a rapport with our young monarch, I feel it would be wise for her to make the first contact with her.
He looked at Rosie imploringly.
It is crucial in this early stage to establish a voice in her court and gain her trust. Make her come to rely on you. I trust you can handle that, Rosie.
She nodded.
I can. I'll help the girl set things back the way they were before. I mean, After what happened, she's got to understand that there's just the way things have to be.
Good, good. You'll all report to Zestiel and I. Once we know more, we can start to tackle the problems as they come.
All right, enough business,
Arachnus said, standing up and turning towards the bar.
Let's have some fucking drinks already.
Stolas sighed gratefully. He hadn't realized until now how tired he was. A little liquor sounded like just the thing to ease his mind.
Yes, he said, making his way towards the bar. Let's have some drinks.